homage to all those beings who have become extinct, all of those going extinct, all of those who have yet to become aware of the possibility of extinction, or to be directly affected by the changing climate, the changing context that is naturally a result of the cascade set off by our diligent human creativity. We tend to have such almost guilt about not being productive, and yet it's probably at this juncture an important thought to have that what is this productive? What is the problem with being leisurely, with doing nothing but being, but communing with our natural companions, not making anything more, not using anything more than is absolutely necessary. The list that we read this morning, it's the human names of these creatures, these wonderful creatures who most of us have never met, maybe never have heard of. Perhaps some of us know them directly, have had some sense awareness of them. But that's just a very small list of the largest. Think of all of the all of that, those beings that are unseen and hard to see, the small, the community of insects, the below ground inhabitants, the microbial life. There's just so much that lives that we are unaware of. All that lives in the oceans that we don't know. All part of a world that sustains our life. But its value goes way beyond what it does for us. And the import of that is the, and some people have been talking about this, the profound loneliness of a world without the vast, all the many millions of forms of life that not only sustain human life, but are companion to each other, sustain each other. How many forms of life do the trees nurture? How many forms of life do the grasses give a home to? What a vast and rich community of relationship is passing away that we are not even aware of as we become absorbed in our own human environment. So one of the hopes that Sethu and I hold for a retreat such as this is that we walk away much more curious about who else is living along this sidewalk. Who else lives in my yard that I have never seen or heard? Who lives in the tops of the trees? Who lives in the raindrops? Really becoming attuned in the way of not knowing, in the way of an open heart. All of us have come to practice with the sense, variously, of a question of who am I? What is this life? But we want to know who we are. We want to know who we are so that we can live in a way that feels complete, whole, deeply fulfilling, and true. To live the truth. But collectively, we don't know who we are. We don't live as a civilization who knows who they are, who we are. We live in a society whose whole policy is to excite every nerve in the human body and keep it at the highest pitch of artificial tension, to strain every human desire to the limit, creating as many new desires and synthetic passions as possible in order to cater to them with the products of our factories and printing presses and movie studios and all the rest. This underlying intention has infected the cultures around the world now. And now we're also awakening to the limits of that way of living. So we could consider now, what are the obstacles to being touched in a way that changes how we live, that responds authentically and deeply to the tragedy that is unfolding. The tragedy, we all hold this sense, this doesn't have to be this way. We could live differently. We could use our human genius in a way that serves life rather than uses it up. In a way that serves all of life rather than just my life. In my ignorant blindness. So it is such potent and important work to investigate what closes our hearts and what keeps us from really being affected by what is unfolding all around us. The fear that the stress is too much, the automatic closing down and shutting off that all of us must do to a certain extent. The guilt and the unavoidable complicitness of being a member of an interdependent system where we are all, we're all part of that. There's no way to live outside it. There's no way to live outside it. Every object that we use, every food that we eat, every piece of clothing that we wear, it's all part of how we have evolved into the current moment. It's so overwhelming when we consider this. And it's so important to recognize how the overwhelm serves to commandeer our energies, our heart energies. An example of that might be the experience of aversion. You know, I've noticed that some people, when talking about the current set of crises, tearing up, crying. That's one response. I myself often feel sick to my stomach. That's my way of experiencing aversion. However you do it, it's so important to recognize everything that happens when caught up in aversion. And I think of how, you know, there's a lot of teachings in our practice of transforming difficulties into wisdom. And so how is it that we can transform aversion or grief into wisdom? And always the first step in practice is to really experience it fully. Be open to what triggers its arising. It's so important for the world to grieve, for us to feel the profound grief as the old order is dying. The feeling of impotence when the forces so much greater than any individual are unfolding. And this is an opportunity to really bear thoroughgoing witness to the interdependent nature of all life. Of course, these are the consequences of the way we've been living. This almost manic consumption. There was an innocent feeling of promise 100 years ago with the emergence of more advanced technologies. So innocent in that, so innocent. Reaching only into how the technologies immediately relieved some of the stresses of life. A belief in progress having to do with relieving our material restraints. The material restraints which in a way now show themselves to be part of what we really do need to be paying attention to and to respect. So what are the ways that we block out the unspeakable feeling when you see, if you've seen pictures of the whales that have been washed up that are like empty sacks, they've starved because their bellies are full of plastic. That must be experienced in order to motivate our engagement with this koan. Not to disappear and give up the gift of life energy that we have. We're all quite vital in this group. There's a lot of vitality that we want also to really appreciate the vitality of our own current state of being. How can this be used in a way that honors all of life? What are the habits? May all of us become much more minutely sensitive to the habits of mind and body and speech that are part of the old climate way. Not in a way that punishes the self, and not to put our vitality into the inner critic. But to liberate, to step out of the ruts, to take off the blinders, We all want to be good people. This is a phrase that's used so much. So-and-so is a good person. That's such a delusion. We're all everything. What will motivate change? Not guilt. That does not motivate change. Not the kind of change that's needed. We say this in so many different ways, but love. We get around to love. Love that is the poignancy, the beating heart poignancy of grief. We get down to the foundational energies of our life. We're all uncomfortable with uncertainty. It is inherently, sometimes it can be inspiring. But one of the greatest fears is the abyss, you know, falling off into, out of the familiar, out of the known, and out of a sense of control. I'm not going anywhere with this talk. I'm just kind of bringing up all of the areas of all the obstacles to really being willing to be thoroughly stopped in our tracks. As the continent of Australia is now. Life is forever changed. I'm always asking myself, what should I do? What should I be doing? Is there something to be done by this little self? Only slightly experiencing being stopped in my tracks, even with everything that I know and my commitment to being very present in the moment. Because here in this little heaven of Corvallis, for us white folks, nothing much has changed. We haven't been directly affected yet, except by the experiences when we have contact with those who are. I really appreciated when at the start of Sesshin, which was just yesterday, Sato mentioned that one of the gifts of the Sesshin is being able to emerge from the isolation of not being able to talk about all of the aspects of this that are folded into the climate crisis. And we need to go into all of it, into facing death, facing the vastness of space. There's now been a number of astronomers have pointed six different what are they called? that point to the heavens.
Telescopes.
Telescopes around the world, and they are watching in a fairly near galaxy the implosion of a star as it turns back into itself and becomes a black hole. I mean, they're beginning to learn how that unfolds. Imagine if we turned our spiritual energies, our spiritual inquiry, with that kind of focus and power. To our tiny planet, in its crisis of spirit. So this is a crisis that is not about materials, particularly. It's an immaterial crisis. How does this consciousness keep from becoming a black hole? How do we bring forth again the life that has been generated here for millions of years? I'm always inspired by the story of Aurobindoville in central South India, which was a desert, had become a desert. And Sri Aurobindo went and developed an ashram there, and they began to slowly attract water by putting small divots into the ground so that any rain that fell, any moisture that fell, was collected, and then they could plant small amounts. And then slowly an environment came back, and birds and plants that were thought to be extinct have reappeared there. So this great earth is magnificent in its willingness to work with us. But to date, we have not been willing to work with it. So what is the willingness for you, for me? What am I willing to experience? What am I willing to hear? To think is to listen. To listen is to stop moving so quickly, the rush to conclusions, the rush to solutions. Sato and I were sharing in one of our conversations about the characteristic of in pleasure. The ability to really experience pleasure is the willingness to experience, to savor. And when we savor, we're in a pause, we're pausing. So perhaps part of this grieving process and this transition is savoring, taking the time to savor. Every aspect of our life. The goodness of a piece of cabbage, the crunch. the savor of the sound of passing traffic. Can you experience it without all the story that goes along with it? Savoring a candle flame. The itch during Zazen. The grief in the body. Savoring is not holding on, and it's not pushing away. It's thorough presence, thoroughgoing presence. I'm not saying anything that all of us, any of you, don't already know, haven't thought about, but it is something to share together, to bear witness to together, to bring to mind, to help each other remember. So that we know who we are. And we recognize what we don't know. And are open. This is the teaching on emptiness. Open, open, open. Full with this moment. Not having to leap out, leap onto the next continually. Being full is also satisfied. Are you willing to have a satisfied mind and heart when it arises? Willing to notice moments of satisfaction? These are all mind states that we're exploring here. We're kind of traversing the territory of our inner world. All of which is what we bring to this transition, this climate transition. Not to get so busy solving the problem that we forget to bring along savor and love and satisfaction, connection, openness. Into the manner, the attitude that we bring into our life, into whatever it is that we bring forward. Someone mentioned yesterday the effect of the Buddha's bearing. May we all be inspired by that. How we bear our body, mind, and speech as we bear witness, take action, and stay connected.